Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. Lawrence?
Now tuned in to DAR Sports Media, and we are so back with another episode of Weekend Wrestling Dirt to Dirt. We were gone last week because, man, we could not possibly have been more outside the last 2 weeks. Last night, WrestleMania, just ridiculous. But we are back here, and thank goodness, back and better than ever, because... Man, what a week in wrestling, hence the name of the show. We're going to start off with the what in the actual fuck are y'all doing segment, and then we will end on a positive note. I don't know how much time to even give any of this. Because, you know, like we said the last time we were on here, it's just clear that these folks at AEW have kind of picked their lane, and I guess they're cool with it. Because it's all just so fucking Bush League. It's a Bush League move to show. It's a Bush League move to show that fucking footage. It worked out fucking disastrously. It's Bush League attendance at the shows. It's Bush League viewership numbers. And it's Bush League ways of doing fucking business behind the fucking scenes, which we have seen several examples of lately, not to mention the one, obviously, that looms over this show. But... then they show furthermore how they do business by dragging this piece of footage out that only it's just been a lot of vindication for, and anybody who listens to this pod was not even a little bit surprised about anything that CM Punk said in that interview with Ariel Helwani. Was not even a little bit surprised that they decided to do this rating stunt that made them look like shit and only got them back to 819. Like, you can't even get ratings from a rating stunt. I remember a day and age, the good old days, the golden age of AEW, when 819 would have been a fucking alarming number, would have been shockingly low. Like, oh my God, what the fuck happened here? There must have been, you know, one of the 50 excuses that y'all get out whenever they do a shitty number. That's what would have been. It would have been, you know, the proximity to Memorial Day or some stupid fucking bullshit back when they used to do 819. Now 819 is a huge bust, you know, boon for them for showing some salacious video footage that ends up with the number two babyface in the WWE choking the shit out of one of their wrestlers. Nobody should be surprised about all of the clown shit that CM Punk talked about in the interview. No one should be surprised at this dog shit show they decided to put on the other night, built around this piece of footage that ended up working out disastrously. Oh, what the fuck is going on?
You know, what's the saying, you know, told you so? I mean, come on, man. We've talked about this ad nauseum. I mean, how many times can you say the same thing over and over again, right? I mean, you're just repeating yourself. For me, AEW is a lot of things, right? They have so much talent over there in AEW. And I personally love a lot of what they do in AEW in terms of the, you know, performance aspect of it. Obviously, I have an issue with some of their business, you know, obviously. But I don't. It's never really occurred to me over the years that, like, these are the softest people in the game. And when I say that, I mean, some people think soft is a good thing. I mean, clearly. I mean, you can get choked out and then, you know, come out to a bunch of heat. And people are like, oh, my God, nobody's cooler than him right now. Nobody's cooler. Like, he looks like a fucking dweeb, but all right. Like, whatever. So the perspective is, to me, I've always said, like, wrestling Twitter in general has always been revenge of the nerds. There's nothing wrong with nerds, right? There's nothing wrong with nerds. Nerds are cool people, you know? I went to school with, you know, I went to a very gifted high school and middle school because I was a smart kid. So I went from my neighborhood where it was not a lot of nerds, no nerds, to schools where they had some nerds. And the nerds were always, back then, they, like, knew their lane, right? They would do their work. They'd, like, hey, did you see such and such, such and such? And then wrestling Twitter provides these same people who grow up, and it's like, I always want to be the cool kid. I always want to be that kid. I always want to be the jock. I want to be the athlete. I want to be that. So it allows you to talk from a perspective like you think you're cool. And AEW is full of those people, too. And that's why they get along. That's why certain brands full of losers and fucking dweebs get promoted and pushed up by AEW, because they're the same brittle spirited bitch ass people that are, like, in AEW. And once again, I have a couple people that I have love for in AEW. Some of them might be on the way out of AEW. But I think what this shows is that if you rattle their cage, they don't even rattle their cage. If you bump into their cage, like, oh, my bad, and keep walking, we got to get that person back. That's not right. That's not fair. No.
They'll say that after the fact, not when you do the action.
Not when you do it. Not when you do it. Yeah. It's like you walk down the street. You're like, we good? Okay, I got you. See you later.
I don't know how much more perfectly you can summarize this group of people. The fact that that dude tried to humiliate Punk on worldwide television, came backstage, and then said to his face, do something about it. And then they act like that's this assault, this victimization. Because Punk then did something about it. That's because y'all think you can just sit online behind Twitter and say whatever the fuck you want and there should never be any fucking consequences for it.
Brief.
And there you go.
Briefly, there was a guy on Twitter who, after this came out, first of all, he calls himself Big Daddy Beef, which I thought was hilarious. The biggest dweeb looking motherfucker in the entire world. And so, you know, like, normally we'd tweet each other, it's normal shit. The Punk stuff comes out, and I was like, well, damn, see, Punk ain't lying. He was like, Punk was like a big old, big-ass baby bitch, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, you would not say this shit to nobody's face. Like, talk regular. Like, talk normal. Like, stop. Like, why are you doing all that? And he's like, oh, you think it's okay to, like, slap somebody because they said something you don't like? And I'm thinking,
if they tell me, do something about it.
I don't know where the fuck y'all from. If you get in somebody's face and get disrespectful, if you say something disrespectful, somebody's going to confront you for that. Like, everybody ain't built like y'all. Everybody ain't bitches like y'all. Like, I'm the type of person, if I saw somebody I had an issue with, and I saw plenty of people that I had slight issues with in person over the WrestleMania weekend, which we'll get into that later, I'll walk right up to them. And you can ask them. This is people who work in AEW. Walk right up to them. Hey, what's up? What's good? Conversations were had, but it wasn't no, like, rah-rah shit from them, because this is not the energy that certain people have. And I respect people who know they're not on that type of energy, and you keep it that way.
Well,
and don't talk shit.
Those people kept it respectful.
That's it's like, if I approach you and say, hey, what's up? What's happening? Let's go talk in the corner. It's 50 people in this room, but let's go talk in the corner, and people can look at us and watch and see the conversation. That's fine. But if I approach you and I approach you, like, respectfully, a little aggressive because that's just my nature, but, like, respectfully, like, hey, let me highlight you real quick. And we go talk. Ain't nobody telling me do something about it. Nobody's talking like that. We talking like men. If you tell me do something about it, motherfucker, I'm going to do something about it. If you say anything disrespectful to me, I'm going to confront you about it. I might not lead with my fist first, but I'm going to say, hey, you talking shit. What's up? your words can have consequences behind them. And that, and then people don't get that. Like, before social media, people knew your words had consequences. If I was in my, like, in my city where I'm from, if somebody was like, hey, man, he a bitch down the street. Like, he a bitch. And he walks up to you and say, you call me a bitch? 99% of the time, that leads to a fight. Wrestling Twitter is.
Especially if they say, do something about it.
Like, 99% of the time, that leads to a fight. In wrestling Twitter, you call people bitches. You call people this. You call people that. You say the most disrespectful shit ever because you're behind a phone or a computer and you feel comfortable to say that. Then when you finally go outside, if you ever do, because most of you don't, somebody approaches you, you scared as shit. And I mean, I'm not going to talk about the yarn gate situation, because that went viral over the weekend, and that shit, I have a thought on that, but I'm not going to go too deep into it. I think the problem is none of you are built this way in wrestling. You fans, you wrestlers, be good people. Just be nice people. Like, stop trying to be like, oh, we can fire back too. Oh, we're tough too. Oh, we're dirt. Like, no. Like, somebody giving their – Punk gave his experience, right, in AEW. He said the positive outweighed the negative. He said he liked Jack Perry. I don't know how, but he said he liked him. He spoke highly of several things. He just said he didn't think AEW was built on good business. What have we said for months? The same shit. If you feel offended by that, then I think the guilty conscience is setting in for AEW, that you hear this criticism so much, it's like, we got to say something back. If it was unfounded criticism or it's just his perspective, there's people in AEW who love what they do, who will take up for them gladly, Dax Harwood. And even though he was bitching about him a couple months prior to signing his extended contract, like, this is the problem. It's like, it's just all fickle shit. Like, if Punk says, I didn't have an enjoyable experience with this, but I met a lot of friends, I have a lot of people that I'm, you know, I love there, da-da-da. He's like, if I talk to Tony, I'd ask him how's things going. It's not like a beef. Kenny Omega just literally came out and said, mutual respect with Punk. I understand the situation. Some people see things differently. I've always said I thought, if anything were ever happened with the Elite and Punk, it would have been Omega versus Punk anyway. That was what, you know, although other people in the Elite circle were telling me, no, it shouldn't happen. No, it shouldn't happen. And then this is prior to All In. But so I think, once again, there's a disconnect between reality and how AEW sees stuff. Reality is Punk just gave his perspective. And that's his perspective.
It's all because these folks, and honestly, the generation of people that AEW is built to appeal to, would rather watch children burn alive than take any accountability for anything. These people would go into anaphylactic shock. They are allergic, acutely allergic to any fucking form of accountability. They don't want to hold their favorite wrestlers accountable. They don't want to hold their favorite billionaires accountable. They don't want to hold their favorite company accountable. They don't want to hold themselves accountable. What you saw with CM Punk and Jack Perry was real life, real time accountability. They don't want it. And that's why you see people being creeps online about their content and the progress that it makes, or talking crazy about people like Denise Salcedo, because they don't want to hold accountability for themselves either. If your shit's not popping, it's because it's not fucking good enough.
And let me
you
just
need to look in the mirror and hold yourself accountable and say, I'm not good enough. It doesn't mean that you can't become. But that's what that means. It ain't got fucking nothing to do with no goddamn Denise Salcedo. You are not good enough.
And I just want to say,
same people that don't want to hold AEW or Jack or anybody that they like accountable for anything.
I do want to quickly say, a lot of people who are in positions. Not Denise, though. I think Denise is great. I met her at Wale Mania. She is the nicest, like, sweetest person. She is, I don't mean this in a mean way. She's extremely shorter than I thought, like, actually a person seeing her. Like, I didn't realize she was that short. And I know she jokes about it herself. And I think, you know, like, Fightful make jokes about it too. But, like, I didn't realize. But she's such a nice lady. She doesn't come off as, like, mean-spirited at all. Once again, I don't know her personally. I've only maybe talked to her, like, you know, once when I did the Fightful podcast, like, a year or some change ago. And then, you know, in person at Wally Mania for, like, 2 minutes. But I just want to say, like, nobody wants to attack the people who do suck ass and are in positions because they kissed ass to get there. There are people who kissed ass to get larger followings. You know who they are. We've talked about some of these people. These people aren't really, they don't have good content. They don't have any, it's all dirt, dumb shit. But if you kiss ass enough or you attach yourself to companies and you don't give accountability, then that becomes, like, it's easier for you. And I'm going to say this, and I don't mean this in a super mean-spirited way, but there's a couple, I believe, that are in the media, wrestling media, and, like, everything they do is completely biased. And I think that is the exact opposite of what we need. And you know who I'm talking about. They're, like, extra super nice, overly nice, almost to the point where it's, like, Stepford Wives nice type shit.
But that's the fucking perfect example, because no accountability for anybody, ever, none, anywhere, anything. Motherfuckers was on there fucking promoting genocide. And, oh, well, I don't know. I don't know anything about that situation. No accountability for anything ever. Ever. That's the perfect example.
Because when I see that stuff, I'm like, dude, like, come on, man. Like, what are we doing? And once again, AEW has a stacked card for Dynasty. On paper, the card looks pretty good, right? I could care less about the card because the company's goodwill with me is, like, I have my own personal issues, obviously, with AEW, but even as just a fan, I'm like, oh my God, man, like, can we focus? Like, I'm not excited to see the Young Bucks and FTR 4 because they show Jack Perry and it's like, oh, you know, FTR set this up in order to throw us off because they're friends with CM Punk. Like, that didn't really advance. Like, what is that? Like, what does that do? What does that do for me? Like, what does that make me? And first of all, it's a ladder match now. I don't see no fucking Dax Harwood climb no fucking ladder. So it's some of the stuff that they do. Will Ospreay and Brian Danielson, obviously Swerve and Samoa Joe, those are going to be great. Tony Storm and Thunder Rosa, love that. Everything Mariah May is doing, I'm sorry, Mariah May and Mina this Wednesday. I mean, obviously that I love both of those ladies. And so that was fun. I love the whole Toni Storm, Mariah May stuff. And you put Thunder Rosa in the middle. These are some of my favorite women in the company. But the elephant in the room with the women's division, we've talked about this a lot.
It's good that now we were once again like usual way ahead of the curve on this, but now it's getting so loud that people are saying it out loud on Twitter. Everything that she has been involved in has been a fucking abomination. This terrible. Has been a goddamn disaster. Between the zero needle movement, between how fucking bad every single fucking thing that she has been involved in has been. I don't even know what to, I.
It, you know,
we have to say it every time. It ain't got nothing to do with her talents or abilities. Like, we ain't saying that. I'm sure once she gets in the ring, God willing it soon, it'll be good. But fucking damn.
You got a month and some chains to go before she's in the ring. Double or Nothing, which is on my birthday. Double or Nothing's on my birthday. So I get to see Mercedes Moné, if I care to watch it, wrestle for the TBS Championship, which 9 times out of 10, she's going to win that. And she's more than likely going to be Willow. And Willow's going to probably turn heel, or maybe Mercedes is going to turn heel. Not really sure. But I know that I was told by someone in February that the Willow Statlander Stokely story is heading somewhere interesting. And I said to them then, I said, hey, I'm pretty sure that means Mercedes is going to be involved. And he's like, yeah, I mean, it's obvious, right? I'm like, yeah. I thought to myself, that's a horrible way to start her career in AEW. Not because there's anything wrong with Willow, Stad, or Stokely. These are all three very talented people. It's just because how does she fit in the story and how does it make it work? And we're going off of, oh, well, you know, right when Mercedes got injured, which will be almost a year to the day when she wrestles, I think. I think they're doing it because of that. I think she's been cleared or she's close to cleared already. So it just doesn't make any sense to me what they're doing. I think you can do a lot more with Mercedes than just having her sit down, promo segments, lights going off, she gets attacked. No, you mean tell me in that big ass room where they were, like they cut the lights off, ran and attacked her, boom, 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 we ran out, cut the lights on. Oh my God, what happened? Nobody saw anybody. Like nobody saw anybody leave. Like, I get it, it's wrestling. You're supposed to suspend your disbelief. I totally get it, but it's just that shit is silly to me.
Had her laying there like a Life Alert commercial.
Just, yeah. It was just terrible.
The sound, and then the sounds that she was making, if you weren't watching the screen, sounded like something else.
I'm not going
to. Okay, it's wrestling. It's supposed to be whatever, but like this is the highest paid female performer in the history of professional wrestling. What the fuck is this? What is this?
I think we knew that Mercedes.
We knew.
But I think we knew that though. Like, and I didn't want to say this back then. Mercedes now works better as an attraction, like as a star attraction, but also one that doesn't talk a lot. So it's like kind of hard. Like you see how Toni Storm can go out there, Mariah May, and they can do a promo or commentary, and it's so entertaining because the character's so over the top and it just works. Mercedes, though, when Mercedes goes out and she talks, it's like very hit or miss, more missed than hit. And it's just because she's never been a promo person. You know, like when I like Sasha Banks, I just was like, oh, Sasha Banks go out there. She got the look. She got the, you know, the music. She come out there. She got a little swag, sweat.
Yeah.
Like she's like, she has an it factor. She's just not really the best talker, but I don't think
there's better in match shit talker.
Yes,
than
she's a promo. Yeah. You got to keep her. You got to condense what we see of her, because the more you see of her, then I feel the little flaws that she has as a performer, they get exposed. And I think that's also a problem in AEW in general. A lot of these other guys and girls in general, if you put them in a different scenario or a situation where they weren't around as much, I feel like some of their issues, like, okay, I don't want to do this, but I'm going to do it. Like a Sammy Guevara or a Jungle Boy in WWE as mid-carders would probably be totally fine. Because they can go out there with Santos Escobar, your Rey Mysterios, and they would lose most of those matches. But in AEW, they're getting title matches. They're getting, like, long promos. They're giving these gimmicks. They're not that good. Jungle Boy Jack Perry, or whatever, Scapegoat Jack Perry. And first of all you people who bought this shirt, you're fucking losers. Just being honest. Motherfucker get beat up backstage and you're like, oh, I'm gonna go buy his t-shirt. Well, he like reminds you.
That's the fucking, you know, nobody ever, we've talked about it before, but that's one of the main pet peeves with those people too, is the cannot keep the same energy. Do the fucking merch sales numbers matter, or do they fucking not? Do the ratings fucking matter, or do they fucking not? Please
make up your minds. You're going to see that Sting shit with AEW wins again. If they ever go over a million again, they're going to say that. But when it's
But when they're now eating shit in the 700s, oh, well, you know, people don't watch TV like that anymore. Only thing that matters is because I like it. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, okay.
That's how somebody say. If you care so much about the ratings, now are you really a wrestling fan? Oh, you're so fed-pilled. You're so dur-dur-dur. And it's hilarious because you're the same people.
I fucking am concerned with those numbers because I'm a wrestling fan, because I want them to fucking get a good rights renewal and succeed and be financially solvent for the next fucking 10 years. So, yes, that is the primary fucking reason that I care about it. Hello.
But it's so bullshit.
That's what I was about to say, is I've seen these people. Well, really, the renewal is the only thing that matters, not the numbers. Someone said that. How the fuck do you think they get the fucking renewal? Not by their fucking numbers torpedoing and the show looking like shit because there's 3,000 people in the fucking 18,000 people building.
I'll be honest. I'll be really honest. David Zaslav is an idiot. So as bad as their numbers could be,
tried and still true. Yeah. I mean, yeah, maybe it'll be all right.
So I think in that case, but if they were going somewhere else outside of, like, you know, Warner Brothers Discovery, those numbers would be alarming because it's like, hey, if we go back and look at the data from, you know, September 2021 to, you know, April of 2022, you guys were doing hit a million and a million and a million and 950. And then you had a show on Friday in August of 2021.
Even still, even if they get a renewal and things keep going the way they go, I know maybe some of you don't know this because, man, if there's anything we've learned since this pod has started is that wrestling fans are just unfathomably sheltered. But there's this thing called getting canceled that happens to shows all the fucking time. So even if they get a renewal and the numbers keep going to shit and the attendance keeps going to shit, they could get canceled. They could get pulled off of TNT. Like,
well, right now, AEW has a prime chance to reverse their goodwill, or reverse the bad will that they're building by simply staying in their lane and doing what really works for them and not trying to compete or trying to be this or be that. You're number two. You're always going to be number two. You want to be the alternative, and then we see that you're really no different than the other guys. And it's like, the other guys are really hot right now, right? Drew McIntyre, CM Punk, The Rock, Randy Orton, LA Knight, Cody is the champion now. I mean, which I hate, but everybody else seems to like. AJ Styles is about to get a title shot. And that's going to be Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles could actually be very fucking entertaining and actually pretty fucking good. So when you look at these things, right, like, look at what WWE has to offer. AEW, for me, offers more of what I would enjoy. You have a Mercedes Moné, a Toni Storm. You have a Mariah May. You have a Thunder Rosa. You have a Will Ospreay. You have a Okada. You have, I mean, at one point, FTR. I really don't give a shit about him now. Fuck Dax. But it's like you have a Swerve, Samoa Joe. You have that. But I saw somebody say this, and this feeds into how AEW fans are so lost. I saw somebody say, hey, if things keep going this way, I would do scapegoat Jack Perry versus Swerve at Double or Nothing for the championship. And I saw that, I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, and like, I thought that person who said it was joking, but then I started seeing more people jump on it, like, hell yeah, bring Jack back and put Okada behind him and put the Bucks behind him and make him go for the title. And I'm like, nobody wants to see that shit, man. Like, why would I want to see that shit? And I think, once again, there's also a problem right there. When Swerve wins the title, because I'm assuming he's winning the title, who's his first challenger? Who's his first challenger going to be? Who has been built up strongly enough in AEW right now? Okada, who is the international champion? Is it going to be a Samoa Joe rematch? Which, I mean, AEW doesn't really do too many of those. Is it going to be Hangman Page? Who's coming back as with a heel, maybe, or to be a heel? Are we going to go Trent Beretta, who turned heel as well? Is it going to be Darby's injured, so he can't be him? Eddie Kingston? Who's been built to be the guy? Swerve has spent the last year being built to this position. There's nobody else that's really built to go to that next level that's there. And I think it's because of the fact they've signed these new guys. Ospreay is going to be the only one. Unless you give Danielson a title shot, we know he's not going to win. I'm okay with Swerve and Danielson at a Double or Nothing, but you need a match that's going to carry, and I think that's a problem they're going to have, and it's not an indictment on Swerve. It's an indictment on their booking and how no one can keep the momentum because they just keep – it's just flip-flop. And it's not even 50-50 booking. It's just confusing booking because – Swerve should be the guy. But even with that, the Swerve and Joe thing doesn't even feel that special to me anymore. It's like it lost a little bit of its luster after Revolution. And they did a great job with that, the Blood Inc. the ink, you know, signing his name. That was a great segment. I think they're knocking out the park as far as the feud, but it's just not, it just doesn't hit like I wanted it to. And that's just with most of the stuff, I think, with AEW in general right now. But I, to say positive things, I am looking forward to seeing the Joe and Swerve match. I'm looking forward to see Ospreay, Danielson, Tony Storm, Thunder Rosa. Maybe Julia Hart and Willow's up in the air, right? I think Julia Hart got injured. We don't know how severe the injury is, so we'll see. Maybe they can plug in somebody else, you know, somebody else to do that. Maybe she's not ready yet, but yeah, there's a lot of. The dynasty card looks good on paper. It's just I also don't care about it. So that's like
why it's, you know, it's the same old. That's why it's frustrating. Because dynasty card looks awesome. All the while, y'all are making absolutely sure that as few people as humanly possible are actually going to see it, because you continually make yourself look unserious in Bush League. While being in denial about it, while the numbers are very clearly telling you it. I think 30 minutes is enough. We've given it more time than we should have. Yeah, tell us about your weekend last weekend.
I will say this. That was, you know, I've spoken for years about how this industry, wrestling industry, has not treated me fairly in several instances. And we've seen that clearly, as has been evidenced by this AEW debacle that's been going on for months now. But I got to start with Wale Mania. Wale Mania was an amazing experience. It started off, because I'm honest, it did not start off the best. It was, first of all, very, very windy and chilly in Philly, which I was surprised. I was like, why is it so windy and chilly in Philadelphia right now? Like, what is happening here? just didn't understand that. But they had us stand outside. The media, of course, if anybody doesn't know, I was, you know, working media for Wale Mania. I have yet to actually – I've shared photos because I – you know, but I haven't did a complete write-up on it, and also don't have my laptop is not with me at the moment, so I couldn't do the it's in storage, so I had to get it out of storage and do the video that I planned on trying to put together. But I think Wale Mania was the great kickoff to a weekend that I did not expect to turn out. My co-host seemingly knew. He said this. He was like, you're gonna go there for Thursday. And I would have never guessed that I would have gotten a free hotel room for Saturday. Did not expect that, which, if people know my situation, that worked out beautifully for me. Very nice hotel, too. Terrible view, but very nice hotel. I saw some, like crackheads or something. They were, like hanging out the window. But so Thursday, getting there, Wale Mania, we're there for an hour and a half outside in the cold. Everybody's a little cold, so everybody's a little stuffy when we get in. They messed up, 10 to 15 different people's media ticket. And it was because it was like, oh, there's such a high demand. There's so many people who tried to get, you know, we accepted some people and got their credentials and some people we didn't. And it took like an hour or two or hour and a half, but it finally got corrected. And when it got corrected, I was able to get back where I needed to. And I got to meet a lot of different people. I got to meet Big E for the first time, R-Truth. This is the second time I met Big E. I met Big E 7 years ago backstage at a SmackDown, but nobody, you see people all the time, they don't remember you. So, Big E, R-Truth, Powerhouse Hobbs was there, and he told me something that I was supposed to, I'm supposed to not sell, but this baffles me because he's from the Bay Area and always seen him in Golden State Warriors gear. And he's actually not a Golden State Warriors fan, which completely threw me off because we were talking about basketball and I was like, bro, what? You're from the Bay? And I say, you're from the Bay? And as I have a co-host who represents San Francisco team, I was kind of like, wait till I tell my co-host about this shit. wait till I tell my boy about this shit here. So, you know, Powerhouse Hobbs was cool talking to him. I got to reunite with two people who I started with in this business, and three people actually. And Cedric Alexander from WWE I was the first person, he said this himself, the first person who said, you're going to make it to WWE. We were in North Carolina together. like a lot of people didn't know anything about him and what he did with the CNC Wrestling Factory with Caprice Coleman. I was the one who, you know, and I had my old account. I was like, yo, this is the guy. This is the guy. He is going to make it. This is my brother. We rode up and down the road, ate a lot of Bojangles over the years. And, you know, you make it to WWE at one point, and I guess, you know, old True, which is not too far off from current True, can be a little too hot to stand close to sometimes. So, you know, we kind of had a little falling out, but we talked privately, and we dapped up, and we had like a extended hug, and we took pictures together and shit. And it was like, that's what you need, you know, in this business. I think a lot of times communication with people, you know, can go a long way. And people that I hadn't talked to, I saw Big Swole, who I talked to Swole recently over the last couple months anyway, but seeing her, getting to hug her, and she was the love she gave. She was like, I'm so glad you made it. Like, I'm so like, it was a genuine, like, yo, I have not seen you in forever. It's a family reunion. Wally Mania was like a family reunion. And I got to meet Beanie Siegel, you know, Freeway, which for me personally, you know, hip hop guy. I mean, I'm from that era, the Rockefeller era. That was a moment just getting, I didn't get to see them perform because I was backstage, but when I got off stage, I just got to, you know, give them daps up and talk to some of their crew, to some of the people in State Prop crew, and Young Chris too. It was amazing. Like I don't have any memories of what happened on the stage because I didn't see any of the shit that happened on the stage at Wale Mania. All the stuff that happened for me was all backstage, just talking to people. You know, shout out to James Vanderbeek, who is very popular in the wrestling Twitter scene. I spent a good amount of my backstage time with him, talking with him, stealing a lot of them free drinks in the back. Did not get any of the free Wingstop because these motherfuckers are, and I'm going to call out Seahawk, Cam, motherfuckers are greedy. Motherfuckers took all of the goddamn wings and took them in the green room. I was like, really? I get backstage. Like, he's like, yeah, free drinks, man. Everybody got free drinks. We got chips. We got snacks. And go ahead and get that.
I'm hot. Missing out on those wings. Man, I love fucking wings.
Dude, I was so mad. I was like, I'm going to go to Cam. I'm like, hey, bro, what the wings at? He was like, oh, yeah, niggas ate them already. I was like, God, fuck. So I wanted them wings bad, but also I got to actually meet Cam, actually officially for the first time. I mean, we've, you know, done plenty of shows together and been talking to him for years. We actually got to officially meet, chop it up. There's a picture out there and on his video of myself, Cam, and Will Washington from AEW, which is interesting. Interesting. As Cam said, it was three different shades of light skinned people. So that was what he classified it as. I was surprised he put it in his video, but yeah. I got to troll Angelo Dawkins a little bit, just fucking with him, because if you know, he's a big LeBron, big Lakers guy, or wherever team LeBron goes, he's a big LeBron guy. And so we had like a 10-minute conversation about the Lakers, and then he was like, "You a Lakers fan?" I was like, "Man, fuck no!" And like he's like, "Yeah." I was like, "You thought you had a friend?" Like, so I got to joke around with these guys and just, you know, have fun with them, and it's just like it was like the perfect beginning to a weekend that I did not expect to go the way that it went. And I think everybody should go to Wale Mania. I think if you love hip hop at all, if you love professional wrestling, the way that they structure the DJ sets. I think Corey Towns was there too. I if I'm not mistaken, I think that's Jazzy Jeff's son. Or a nephew, I don't know. I'm not sure, but I know the name. So that was great. Like I said, it was just a great event. That was my highlight of the weekend because it was like a family reunion. I did not partake in the event. I did not get a whole bunch of pictures like that because once my phone was already dying and I didn't get a chance to charge it before I headed over to Wale Mania like that, but it was just like a good environment to be in. Met a lot of different people. Some people work for WWE. You know, I got to see Sky Blue and Willow in person, just tell them how, you know, how much of a fan that I am. I got to, you know, another reunion with our guy, my guy, Darius Lockhart, who he does the Ashe Wrestling based out of North Carolina. Another guy who I was there when he was training and, you know, definitely was, you know, one of the first, I think I gave him his first ever interview and professional wrestling through my old Eyes on the Ring brand that we used to do. He was like the first people, you know, first people who gave him a kind of gave him that look. And so just to get to reunite with a lot of people, that I hadn't seen in like 5, 6, 7 years. It was a really great experience. And, you know, I got to meet Wale. I've not always said the most positive things about Wale, but you know, because I'm not a big fan of his music, I should say. And, but I got to meet him briefly and stuff like that. People connected. We met each other 12, 13 years ago in a studio in Maryland, but like that wasn't a favorable experience. I don't think he probably doesn't remember that, but I remember that. But it was all love. It was all cool. And like I said, just being backstage and taking in that event was the highlight of the weekend for me. And like I said, you know, got to see some AEW people, got to talk to several of them. And yeah, and I saw somebody who apparently had an issue with me in AEW. They were backstage. They didn't say anything to me though. So they tried to avoid, I mean, well, they did talk to me briefly. Then they found out who I was and they went the exact opposite way. I was like, oh, they're like, no, those conversations are going on. So well, yeah, that's why
you went your own way further on into WrestleMania night one. Tell us about what that was like.
Not expected. I came back from Philly Friday as documented. And, a childhood friend of mine that I've known since kindergarten texted me and he said, yo, you were at Wale Mania? And I was like, yeah, I work media. He's like, yo, I saw you, like, you was Cedric and you was such and such. He was like, yo, you in a room with this person, with that person? Yo, that's dope. And I was like, yeah, bro, you know, I told you, I've worked in wrestling for years. Well, yeah. And he goes, man, I'm going to WrestleMania, man. I just bought this ticket for $600. And I was like, you just bought a ticket for how much? He's like, yeah, man, you know, $600, bro. I want to go to WrestleMania. And I was like, word, that's dope. And he was like, yo, I know your situation. Like, what's going on? And I, you know, talked to him a little bit about it because we hadn't really talked about that aspect of it, about what's, you know, the day-to-day stuff and all that shit. So he goes, yo, I got this voucher thing, you know what I'm saying? It's like Hilton Reward shit, bro. Like, you can come up to Philly, man. He was like, I ain't got the extra $600 to get another ticket, but he's like, shit, I get you the room. He was like, you know, if you get some food or something, you know what I mean? And you know, we chop it up, and like after the show, we'll hit the town, hit the bars up and stuff. I was like, shit, hell yeah, fuck it. I said, I know a lot of watch parties for free. I would go. So I came back to Philly on Saturday with the idea being I was going to go to the Jobber Tears watch party where the Ringside Club, Black Guy Wrestling Podcast, and all those great people were actually at, I think, Live Casino watching, which is like right across the street from Lincoln Financial Field. They were watching the show. So I am on my way up to Philly, and then I get a random notification from Ticketmaster saying you have a ticket to WrestleMania. And I was like, I'm looking at my boy like, I was like, yo, did you do this? And he was like, do what? I'm like, yo, somebody just sent me a ticket. He's like, what? A ticket to what? I'm like, to WrestleMania. He's like, nah, you tripping. So I go to my email. I have like 10 different emails. This is one of my work emails that I've used for like through wrestling and all stuff like that. So I go, I look, and I'm like, oh, shit. I got accepted. So I got to accept the ticket. So I accept the ticket. And it doesn't show you who actually sent it to you. So I just knew, yo, I got a ticket. And it was like, you know, it was one of those like limited view, obstructed view things because I didn't get to see like the set. But I could give two shits. You just get to be in the building. And it caught me off guard. I found out who did it. And somebody who I helped out tremendously over the years. And we hadn't kept too much in touch over the years, but apparently they saw something on Twitter and they were like, fuck it, man. And I think I jokingly was like, hey, man, you know, somebody got extra WrestleMania ticket date, you know, like I did the Kevin Hart, you know, can I get that on the house, you know, jokingly. And it actually happened. And I was like, yo, there's no fucking way this has happened. And so I had a tear in my eye because I was like, yo, I've always wanted to go and sit in an actual WrestleMania that had one of my favorite wrestlers of all time wrestle, and that was The Rock. I'd never seen The Rock wrestle in my adult life. I was like very young kid when I saw him wrestle. It was Stone Cold Steve Austin and Vince McMahon against The Rock and D'Lo Brown on Monday Night Raw. I was there live as a kid, and that's the last time I saw The Rock live. And it's been, that was like 25, 26 years ago. So get into, go to WrestleMania. It was amazing. But the downside of this is that, and I saw all you motherfuckers, including my co-hosts, like, oh, it ain't that cold. It's not going to be that cold. Not that. I think they're not that cold. God damn it, I sat my ass for five, six hours, and that wind was blowing like a motherfucker. And I was just like, yo, it's cold, bro. And like, people next to me had big-ass blankets, and I'm like, David, why did I think of that? They had big-ass blankets, and they wrapped up with, like, winter coats, and I got just my little jacket on with my hood on, and I'm just like, oh, it's not that bad. Okay, it's not that bad. And it was cold as shit. But live, it's funny. WrestleMania live, I guess because I've been to so many events, it didn't hit like that. Maybe if I was there for night two and I got to experience that last 5 minutes of the main event,
yeah,
that would have been, I would have lost my fucking mind. But like when The Rock comes out, you know, the Rhea Ripley Becky match, I enjoyed that. I thought, I thought night one was cool. It's just that it's hard to enjoy it when you're cold. And it's like you don't really want to react too much, or you're like you're enjoying it. But like Rock, Roman, Seth, and Cody, that match live in my section, everybody, and I guess it's hard in a stadium of 70,000 people to hear everything, but my section was going nuts. They were going crazy. Like everything Rock did, people behind me, you still got it. You couldn't really hear it. You know, when I watched it back on television, I was like, you can't really hear it like that. Okay, you can't really hear it. But people were going crazy, and that was the match I think everybody was there for that night, because the Jey Uso, Jimmy Uso thing, I'm not going to lie, that shit sucked. That's a pretty bad match, which clearly they're going to reunite the Usos because it's not working for Jimmy Uso as a singles wrestler. Jey Uso is doing great, but it's pretty obvious they're going to reunite the Usos, which, once again, I think Jey Uso has something as a singles wrestler, so we'll see how it goes. But I think it's a once in a lifetime experience to go to WrestleMania. I did go to WrestleMania weekend back when it was WrestleMania 35, but I didn't really care too much at the time for the product. And, you know, WWE 2019, it just, you know, 2017, 2018, 2019 just didn't do much for me. And I had like access to go to all the events back then for WWE. It just didn't really move me like that. But WrestleMania night one, like I said, for me, the match that really, really, really made it worthwhile was the main event of night one. And I was just excited to be in the building for something I had no idea that I would have been in the building. Like I said, my co-host said it, a couple other people said it. And it's funny because I told a friend of mine on Friday night, I texted him because he was like, bro, WrestleMania is tomorrow, man. And, you know, he's a big fan. He really wanted to be able to go to WrestleMania one year, but he works during the weekend, so he couldn't go. And he was like, man, I wish you could go. I didn't know you did Wale Mania yesterday, but like, dude, it'd be awesome. And I said this to him, and I had no idea this was happening yet. I said, I have a weird feeling that I'm going to find my way somehow back up to Philly before the weekend's out. I just have this feeling. I couldn't put my finger on why. I just like, when I have those feelings, something usually happens. So, and it did. And so, you know, like I said, seeing The Rock live, I could have done without seeing Cody's lame ass entrance live, but it's all good. You know, everything else is good, man. Like I said, for someone who's gone through the last 5 or 6 months that I've gone through, last weekend really was, you know, like, I mean, you go back to reality after the weekend's over, but last weekend was really, really important. It was really clutch for me. And getting to say, yo, I went to WrestleMania, you know, like I've been to NBA playoff games. I've been to tons of NFL games. I've been to tons of wrestling events. But WrestleMania, it's just different. You know, it's just a different feel. It's in a stadium. It just feels so important when you're walking in there. And just to, you know, 70,000 people. I'd never been to a wrestling event with 70,000 people. And that was the first. Like I said, I was there for WrestleMania 35 weekend. But I did not go to the actual show. I did everything else except go to the actual show. And this time, I went to the show. But my weekend was
like, yeah. So how do we like the week after the new directions of the WWE? I think probably the biggest thing coming out is what happened on SmackDown Friday night when we have apparently a splintering of the bloodline, new people in the bloodline. Tama Tonga comes out. Probably the biggest thing that's changed. All the new champions didn't seem to be. They're building programs. They're building angles for them, but they're like backlash angles. Like, okay, whatever. New bloodline members. How are we thinking about that?
The Tama Tonga. That's the newest bloodline member. The bloodline storyline has been going on for about 3-4 years now. 3 to 4 years now. And there's no fucking end in sight, because when they said, like, this is the biggest family in wrestling history, we're really about to see.
There's still more. Yeah.
There's Jacob. There's Zilla. There's Lance. There's like, who else? Am I missing some other people?
And let me tell you, I think this happened since we last recorded. Jacob Fatu. For those of you who don't know yet, you are about to fucking know, because that dude is 10 out of 10 in every fucking facet of professional wrestling. You just fucking wait. Whew.
Yeah, and he is officially signed to WWE, which it's funny. I thought he was going to show up at Mania, because while we're like there at the show, people are like, I hear people talking. I'm like, oh, yeah, like Jacob Fatu signed this weekend. He's signed this weekend. Tell him he signed this weekend. And I was like, what? And so I text somebody I know that, you know, is in WWE. And I'm like, hey, is this Jacob stuff true? And they're like, I can't say yes. I can't say no. And I'm like, okay, so you're basically telling me what I needed to know. And I was like, really? Like, Jacob, I'm thinking he's got to be coming out during the main event. But then I realized, WWE, the Bloodline is their Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's just that we got Infinity War, night one of WrestleMania. Endgame was night two. They're going backwards because we're about to get Civil War. We're about to get a Civil War with the Bloodline. It's very obvious Roman Reigns is no longer the tribal chief in power. Solo is the interim chief while the final boss is gone. There's a reason why they have these quirky names, right? The tribal chief, the final boss, the head of the table, because it's all about power. The Bloodline is all about power. And how do you obtain that power? By winning, by success. Roman Reigns, longest reigning champion in decades. Success is why. You lose that belt, you lose your seat. You're no longer the head of the table. You're no longer the top guy. And who did beat the guy that beat you? The final boss. So this all leads to, eventually the story has to go around to, eventually we're going to get to Rock versus Roman. I think that's pretty obvious. That's going to be the final boss. And the only person who's going to ever have a pinfall over him. Well, maybe Cody and SummerSlam. I don't know. You know, there's that segment from Monday where they kind of planted the seeds for when Rock comes back, he's going to come for Cody, which is pretty much saying there's going to be a Rock versus Cody match one-on-one. I'll be interested to see how Rock manages that. He's off shooting a movie right now. He's off doing Moana 2 live promotion right now too, but he's about to go shoot a movie, I think, in like the next week or so. So there's so many stories planted where Rock and Cody are like outside of the Bloodline Civil War, but Rock has he has a hand over it, because it doesn't feel like Roman would be the one who says, hey, take out Jimmy. That doesn't feel like something. If anything, he probably would need to cling to his family even more, because he has to get back to where he was. So that's where I feel like there's, and plus also, we watch night two, Solo and Roman had like a moment where Solo was like, finish it, end it. And it was kind of like an uncertain vibe. And of course, Cena comes out and all the other stuff. And so what I will say is I'm not invested in the Solo Sokoa solo run in terms of like him being like the top of the Bloodline. But when the two star power guys in the Bloodline are not around, and in the third, and really the baby face that was in the Bloodline is on the other channel, and he's about to wrestle for the world title, it's very hard. So eventually, like I said, it's all is leading somewhere. I saw a lot of theories. I think, you know, people said Jay, Jimmy, Roman, and then Sami Zayn is going to pop back in to help them out against Rock and Solo and Tama Tonga and then Jacob Fatu. And it's like, you know, will they get Zilla in here? Will they get anybody? You know, so there's a lot of questions that can be asked about where they're going with everything. And I'd like to see, you know, I'd like to see where it goes. I'm not sure. It's gonna be the cinema, as they call it, the cinema that the last couple years have been, because the Bloodline storyline absolutely saved WWE's ass, and I don't think there's any denying that, because without that storyline, WWE is not as hot as you know. I mean, we were getting, was it Roman versus Brock like every 6 months? And then this Bloodline story comes in, and then you add the Sami Zayn, you got Cody, Jay leaves and becomes a huge babyface, all because of that one story. The only face that they have, babyface that they have that has no ties to this story is CM Punk, like in LA Knight. But LA Knight even kind of got in the midst of that. You know, like everybody else is some way attached to it. Seth Rollins is Seth Rollins, but even he hasn't been attached to this story for a while. Cody came in and got attached to it. So there's a lot there, and I'm interested to see the new direction, because I think WrestleMania is where the momentum dies off for WWE in a little bit, where they start to lose it. You know, Rock really revamped all of this shit. Rock saved WrestleMania, and Rock is gone for three months now. So, you know, what do we do without that? You know, how can we make this show compelling? I think the Bayley, what Bayley does next could be compelling. I think what Rhea Ripley does can be compelling. There's the Bianca and Jade tag team, which we called months and months ago that we kind of saw, and they're going to become tag team champions, which eventually...
Damian Priest, new World Heavyweight Champion.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how long he holds that belt. I don't see that being a long run, but... I think, once again, Drew McIntyre, whatever he's doing next, there's a lot of interesting things. I just think we're in a wind down period, right? It's like a wind down. We wind down a little bit and to build it back up. You got to wind it down. So you get rid of the Romans and the Rocks. Seth is, we don't know what Seth is going to do, because Seth seemed like he was genuinely hurt at WrestleMania again. I hope not. We haven't really heard anything, but. You know, if Seth can be a part of something, maybe Seth comes back and you know, they do something with him. But, like, WrestleMania is where you build everything up to culminate. And now new stories will come out of it, which, like I said, you know, the Solo, Jimmy thing, that's a new story. Or not new story, but a new element to a story that's been kind of, you know, going. And then Drew McIntyre and what he's got going on, we'll see. I mean, him being Hater of the Year is very entertaining. So what's his next step? Damian Priest versus Jey Uso. Very interesting. Like, so they have these different little things that they can do, you know. Can Jey Uso get a title run and you know, get that before going, you know? So there's something there. I'm really excited to see where this Bianca and Jay thing goes. I'm pretty sure the Kabuki Warriors are going to drop the belts to them. It would only make sense for Damage Control to lose everything. Because I'm pretty sure Damage Control is not staying together for super long going forward. Just don't see it. So, I mean, I'm sure the Kabuki Warriors will, but I think there's going to be something where Asuka and Kairi Sane separate from, you know, Io or Dakota. Not sure how that's going to play out, but Damage Control has been around for like almost 2 years now. So I'm almost certain that that's going to lead to something changing or something happening. But, like I said, I think WWE has a lot of momentum. It's just, can you sustain what you just did without the biggest pieces of why you were doing that, which is Rock, I believe, and Roman. I mean, CM Punk will be around a lot because he is not far off from what I was told. He's not far off from his goal to start training again to get back in the ring. He's not ready. He's not, like, close to returning to the ring, but he's close to his point of where he can start doing some in-ring training to get himself back in a ring shape. I mean, he was off for like 3 months, came back, and then it's been off for another 3-4 months. So you got to kind of get back in there, get your conditioning up, you know, get your cardio and everything. So a CM Punk returning in, say, a June or July to the ring would work wonders for WWE, and it would definitely bolster their program. So a lot to look forward to. This summer, I believe this SummerSlam will be huge. I believe The Rock will have a part in it. Pretty sure CM Punk will be wrestling, have a part in it. If I'm a betting man, I saw a lot of, you know, fake cards and fake posters. A lot of what you're putting out there is definitely possibly in the plans. The Seth and Roman story is not over. Cody and Rock story, not over. Drew and CM Punk, a lot of people said Clash at the Castle. Don't know if Punk is going to be fully ready to wrestle by then, but if he was, I think there's a lot of ways that could go for Punk at SummerSlam. So it's just about executing it right. And if WWE can do that with this quote unquote new regime, then yeah. Once again, I still hate everything because Cody's champion. So, you know, whenever he loses that belt, I'll be a full-fledged WWE
fan. Well, speaking of brands who are building momentum into the summer, we here at DAR Sports Media still coming to you every other day. We got Hooping and Hollering on Wednesdays. We got Football Fridays on Fridays. NFL Draft coming up. That'll be a blast on that show. And we produce a show for the United Football Media Group that goes up on their YouTube page, 9 a.m. Mondays. United Football Media covering the UFL. There's still football going on right now. Spring Football League. Almost every game has a crazy heart-stopping ending. It's fantastic stuff. If you're a football fan, you're not watching United Football League and not getting your coverage from United Football Media, I don't know what you're doing. Thanks. As you can see, all throughout the summer, this past weekend, insane. We're coming a day late because, again, insane. It is because the world of DAR never stops.